it's Friday, and Friday means it's time to throw up the Bob Davis Podcast radio show for this week. This is Bob Davis Podcast radio show number 70, talking about political progress. So let's just go ahead and roll segment one of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show while I drink my coffee. Friday morning. Oh, it's hard to believe we made it. Welcome to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. For all the podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. So in this show, I want to talk about political progress. I'm not quite sure how that's going to go because I am struggling with a lot of things, lots of thoughts. And it's not very often that I sit down to do the radio show with no notes. Usually I have prepared and I have a whole schedule of things that I want to talk about, and I kind of am able to pack a lot of content into these short segments for radio. And I can do it because I've got, you know, notes, and I can sort of concentrate on that. It's not very often that I sit down and for short radio segments just talk, but it's becoming increasingly hard for me to talk about politics. I've talked about that in some of the podcasts I've done recently. And one of the ideas that occurred to me this week is this concept of political progress. Now, I'm not talking about progressive politics. That's one of the biggest problems today, is that you have to qualify almost everything that you say, because if you say something like progress, people think that you mean something else, because we're so keyed to words that supposedly mean things that they don't mean. You're not allowed to say progressive. You're not allowed to say conservative in some circles. You're not allowed to say liberal in other circles. And so the word progressive means many different things to people. But I'm talking about political progress. In other words, forward movement on political ideas we used to talk about pretty regularly. And what's happened is we are, and I kind of want to talk about this over the next hour. We're arguing shards. We didn't used to talk about things like NAFTA because it was pretty much settled. Now suddenly we talk about NAFTA as a shard, and so everything that you have a conversation about, you end up having to do research on. So I was talking with a friend tonight about tax policy, and the fair tax came up. And I ended up having to look it up, and I caught a pile of invective, because I had departed from the phone conversations for a minute to look up something on my phone. And I said, I'm not relitigating the whole idea of a fair tax. I'm just looking up the fair tax to see if it produces more revenue or less revenue than the current tax system. It was just a simple thing. But see, what happens is, if you bring something like that up, now the fair tax is a consumption tax, and it's just one proposal for a consumption tax. If you bring that up in a conversation, well, you end up having to look it up, and it becomes really tedious. You can't have a political conversation, because almost every political conversation is devoid of facts. And I guess I'm kind of throwing it out as a question. Do you feel that we are making political progress? And when I say political progress, I'm going to define what I mean by political progress, because I think some people think what has happened with the election of Donald Trump and the Republican majority in the House and the Senate is that's political progress. But in fact, I don't see it as political progress. We're still arguing. It has now been 10 years almost of arguing about Obamacare. certainly it's been almost 8 years of arguing about Obamacare and who it's going to cover and who it isn't going to cover. The latest wrinkle here is the Congressional Budget Office's scoring of the new legislation, which supposedly says so many people are going to lose their health insurance. And then today there's an article that says actually that they're not counting the voluntary people leaving the thing. And I saw another article that said, you know, guaranteeing, you know, catastrophic health care is what's costing all this money. And so when you simply want to talk, if you simply want to talk about health care reform, and you have to put that in quotes, you end up spending all night looking stuff up on your phone, and it's exhausting. I mean, so have we solved the health care reform issue problem? Have we solved the health insurance conundrum that essentially was the wellspring of Obamacare? Have we solved the problem in the effort to repeal Obamacare? Is that something that you would feel we have made progress on? And that's what I mean by political progress. Have we made political progress on the economy? There's a lot of things being said. There's a lot of plans for budgets that are going to be presented to Congress. There's a lot of discussion of shrinking the size of federal government. There's a lot of discussion about a couple of executive orders. But are we making progress on understanding what it's going to take to cut the budget and get it, quote unquote, under control? Do we really understand what it's going to take to create smaller government? What's your definition of smaller government? How do you define political progress? Because I feel, those are two areas. Another area, of course, is foreign policy. It was announced today that the budget Trump will send Congress will include big cuts in the EPA and funding for the arts and for foreign aid. Foreign aid, of course, accounts for a very small portion of the federal budget. So the idea is that they will make up the $54 billion that they want for defense by cutting these other areas. Now, I don't have too many particular problems with cutting the Environmental Protection Agency or cutting bureaucracies or anything else, but you know, Congress is going to have to take this up, and they're going to have, when they take up their own budgeting, when they take a look, they'll take a look at the president's budget, which is largely symbolic, and then they will formulate their own budget plan. What would you consider political progress in the area of military funding and foreign policy? And I remember during the election saying Americans are going to have to come up with some idea of what they think the foreign policy of the United States should be, and it's going to have to be a little bit more detailed than getting people to respect us again. You know, there's nothing wrong with getting people to respect us again as a goal, but the foreign policy is going to require a little bit more specific, you know, a few more specifics on exactly what our foreign policy will be and how it is going to be carried out. Are we making progress there? Budgeting is certainly just one piece of the economy. There's a lot of other pieces of the economy, and there's a lot of touting of the ADP report and the labor statistics. I mentioned the other day that at one point during the Obama administration, a lot was made out of the number 375,000, that you had to have 375,000 jobs a month in order to begin to make a dent on the number of people, which is roughly 96 million, who are out of the workforce and off of the job search roles. So we created something like 200, supposedly we created. Now, when I say we created, something like 275,000 jobs appeared to have been created in the last jobs report, far south of what it needs to be to actually be a positive number. But we're touting this as a huge victory because, of course, now a Republican is president and Republicans felt something needed to be done. So now the same numbers, roughly, that existed under the Obama administration for a long time, it's month to month, 250, 220, 270, whatever. And of course, every spring, the numbers pop because construction workers are hired and outdoor workers are hired. People are hired to do outdoor jobs every spring because the weather warms up in the South and people start getting hired. I don't know if that's what it was. And, you know, most of the people that I've read have been saying, economist-wise, this is actually a good numbers. Okay, are we making progress on the economy? Are we making political progress on the economy? So those are three or four areas, and I want to talk about some of those in in this show. And again, no real notes, no real research, just frustration about trying to figure out how to advance the discourse and the discussion going forward. So we're going to talk about those things in this Bob Davis Podcast's radio show. We'll start with one of those three next. This is the Bob Davis Podcast's radio show. Just ahead of segment two for this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show, I was texting Ed Johnson at X Government Cars this week, and I said, what's new over there? What's going on? And he said, you know, we're concentrating on these low-mileage Homeland Security and Border Patrol SUVs, Expeditions and Yukons. And yes, xgovernmentcars.com is Minnesota's only dealer specializing in one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks and SUVs. I should not have to mention it because I talk about it every time I talk about ex-government cars, but you can get great credit terms if you need a car and you need a loan. If you have a job, you can get approved. And of course, ex-government cars takes trades. They pay the highest values every day without all the bull. But the main reason is these fantastic Expeditions and Border Patrol SUVs, Yukons and Expeditions, very low mileage. And again, if you can get an ex-government car or truck with low mileage, that is the holy grail of used cop cars, right? Xgovernmentcars.com, they have the Chargers, they have the Impala V8s, they have the Ford Police SUVs and the Ford Police sedans, and of course, the low mileage Expeditions and Yukons from Homeland Security and Border Patrol. Don't forget the 3-day Love It Guarantee exclusively at Xgovernment Cars. What do you do? Get your butt down to Xgovernment Cars, now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North, 763-777-8782. You can check out what they've got by simply clicking on xgovernmentcars.com. Click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page, or just head on down there, 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Okay, here's segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. For all the podcasts, here's what you do. Go to thebobdavispodcasts.com. So we're talking about political progress. And before I get too far down the line, let me give you a little bit of an idea of my own frustration with what's going on right now. So if you go through any kind of an organized analysis of what's going on in the news on a day-to-day basis, and then you hit your Facebook feed, you're going to be looking at two different worlds. On the Facebook feed, you see what people have selected to post on their pages, whether it's a meme or it's a link to an article from some unknown source that talks about something in particular. Sometimes it's real, sometimes it's not real, sometimes it's meaningless. They really are two different worlds. So if you're looking at the day-to-day output of the media, and this would be all sources, from Breitbart to the New York Times, so everything, you can see stories, you know, on a certain path. And then you go to the Facebook feed, and it's A, it's depressing, but B, you see what people are thinking about and what people are attempting to discourse on. And somebody gets beat up in a bar. Somebody's accosted at a stadium. Somebody does something in some demonstration. Somebody on one part of the political spectrum does something stupid. And so that becomes what people are posting on their pages and what people are discoursing about. Somebody charges this, somebody charges that. There's a little argument about it, or there's a long argument about it. And I don't, you can't possibly know every single one of those different little shards that come out, but that's what's going on, where we end up going back and forth over the same ground, or we don't make progress politically on figuring out where and what we're doing and how we're doing it and where we're going. Now, on the right, for example, let's talk about political progress very quickly in politics. On the left, there are groups beginning to get together to get names, to develop networks, to figure out how to find people to be nominated and elected, to figure out how to win the 2018 election cycle. On the right, people get together and celebrate the victory, if that, and most of the time, not very many. Or there's a rally. They have a rally at the Capitol, or they have a rally someplace to talk about Trump. Is there a political organization developing on the right to put pressure on Republican legislators to move forward on some of these issues in the direction that the people who voted Republican wish to go? For example, repealing Obamacare. Well, we're not talking anymore about repealing Obamacare. We're talking about the Paul Ryan version of Obamacare. So we're talking about Ryan Care or Trump Care. We're talking about whether or not the new plan is going to cover your grandmother or not. So we're now back on the same turf that we covered 8 years ago when we started to argue about Obamacare in the first place. And the idea, at least that's the idea that I gathered from covering the Republicans on the campaign trail and gathered from watching the debates and gathered from, you know, the rhetoric during the election, was that the Republicans were going to repeal Obamacare. It was going to be, the ACA was going to be repealed. And it didn't take very long for that whole thing to unravel. So given that, since they certainly could repeal Obamacare if they wanted, and I wouldn't be surprised that the president would sign it, we're now talking about a new version of the same act, which may be better or worse, depending on what side of the political aisle you're on, that's phased in. So that gives potential candidates, you know, 5 or 6 years to talk about things that we're going to do and not do. And then there was one other thing I was going to mention. And again, the cornerstone was the Republicans were going to repeal Obamacare, but we're not talking about repealing Obamacare. Oh yeah, the other thing was, we're now hearing people like Lindsey Graham and the president saying things like, we should just leave it alone and not repeal it because it will collapse of its own weight in, you know, well, 2 years. So they went into office, they ran for office, they may have garnered your vote by saying, we're going to repeal Obamacare, we're going to get rid of it, and they're not doing it. So when I bring up the idea of political progress, if I had defined political progress before the election as, I want to see this law repealed, and my own personal thing is, I want to see the law repealed in total, okay? I don't want to hear discussion about leaving it in place so it will collapse of its own weight. Because I'm sure that that would just give the Democrats the chance to come in and say, we're going to reform it in 2 years. You know, the idea is it'll be so bad that people will understand that it needs to be repealed. Well, weren't we in this position right before November of 2016? Wasn't this why people voted the way they voted? At least some of the quote unquote Republican vote, or some of the, it's not even a quote unquote, some of the Republican vote. Wasn't that why Republicans voted for Republicans? Because they wanted a repeal of the Affordable Care Act. I should put quotes around that. So are we making political progress on that issue? So that's just one example of, you know, when you cut away a lot of the noise, the things that people are posting about, you know, this guy, or the things that people are posting, this guy, like I said, this guy got beat up, this actress got accosted by somebody, supposedly, this girl is screaming in a field with a bunch of Trump protesters, you know, when you cut away all the nonsense, are conservatives or Republicans, because I'll use the words even though I don't believe in them, you know, I don't believe in the word conservative because I don't know if it's descriptive, but so much for that. Are they developing the political systems necessary to put pressure on their representatives to do what they A, said they were going to do, or B, do what the voters want them to do. Because it seems to me that that is happening on the left, that there is a reformation of sorts going on among Democrats, and people are beginning to get organized and figure out how they want to attack the Republicans in the 2018 cycle. Are we making political progress if you're on the right? Do you feel that you're making political progress toward putting the kind of pressure on politicians that needs to be put on the politicians to do what needs to get done? The biggest piece legislatively, the biggest and first biggest piece legislatively drawn from the election cycle was the repeal of Obamacare, not the repeal and replace of Obamacare, not the repeal and reform of Obamacare, not leaving Obamacare in place and letting it collapse of its own weight. It was repealing it. Are we making political progress? Now, you can argue, if you're a Republican or Democrat, you can argue whether repealing it would be progress or not. But for Republicans, my sense is that they thought repealing it would be preferable. That would be considered progress. Are we doing that? The answer is no, we're not. So we're not making political progress in that particular area. And that was some shards of my own to talk about there before I got into that. But those are two little areas. So next, we'll talk about the economy. For more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Live in the studio, just ahead of segment three for this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show. Well, we're getting close to spring, St. Patrick's Day weekend. It isn't warm yet, but it will be getting warm. So remember to think about Ryan Plumbing and Heating when you get ready to start checking your systems for spring. They will be doing the AC checks, and of course it has to be at least 70 to check the AC, so that's coming. Meantime, don't forget emergency service for business and residential. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs, too, for four generations. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. You can call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Residential and business, they go metro-wide. So if you're in Plymouth or if you're in North St. Paul, they can cover you. Wherever you are in the metro, Ryan Plumbing and Heating in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. In St. Paul, 651-224-4771. Online at ryanplumbing.com. That's ryanplumbing.com. And you can click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page. That takes you to their page. Okay, here's segment three of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. For more of the podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. So we're talking about political progress, and I'm doing this off the top of my head. Sometimes it's good to just clear the air and not have notes and just talk about stuff that's on my mind, and I'm feeling a little bit better. You know, I'm into this now 15, 20 minutes, and I feel better. I feel better talking about it than I did, you know, when I started, because the energy's very low, because you end up fighting over these shards, or you end up having to look up everything, because everything has been politicized. Everything is an argument. You want to talk about attacks, or you want to talk about an aircraft carrier, or you want to talk about some plan, you got to look it up, and you got to go back and forth with the facts, because so much has been said, or there are so many different sources that have different information, and it becomes extremely difficult to just have a political conversation. So what I'm trying to do is devolve this into a simple question. And that is, are we making political progress? Now, if you are one of the people that voted against Donald Trump, and you're one of the people that voted against your local Republican congressman, if you are one of the people who is from a largely Democrat district, you know, clearly this is not political progress. And I understand that. You know, and I've been saying, just so people listening who are on that side of the fence, I've been saying, you know, I don't think it's a good idea to just refuse to consider an opposing point of view, because opposition is supposed to serve a purpose. And it's been my experience, sometimes people who oppose both the whatever party's in control, let's say it's the Democrats or the Republicans, sometimes the other side is right, and you have to listen. Sometimes it's hard to listen. You have to listen to what they're saying, because sometimes they provide an important alternative view. And I've certainly had experience with that in my life and during the 20 years that I've been doing political talk and talk radio in general. I have a tendency, and had a tendency, to just not consider the opposing point of view because they were wrong about everything. And on at least a couple of occasions, they actually turned out to be right about something. So this question of political progress is meant to be really directed towards the party in charge and the people who voted for Republicans in the last election, to ask whether they are doing the bidding, the thing that voters wanted. And one of the big issues, both on the campaign trail, in the debates, and in rhetoric on the campaign, was the abysmal state of the U.S. economy, which I wouldn't call it abysmal. I would simply call the U.S. economy moribund, meaning it really hasn't been growing. We've seen 1.5%, 1% growth. If inflation is 1.5 to 2%, then we're not really experiencing real economic growth, even 3 or 4%. Certainly not dynamic economic growth. If you lived through periods of economic growth, dynamic economic growth, whether it was during the Reagan era or during the Clinton era at various times, then you have experienced dynamic economic growth, so you know that what we're dealing with now is considerably different. So this is an interesting issue because different constituencies have different ideas about what makes the economy work, and different constituencies have different ideas about what they think needs to be done to fix the economy. One of the chief reasons many people in rural parts of the country and in former industrial states, the so-called Rust Belt, voted for Donald Trump was they wanted to get their jobs back from China. And so there have been a lot of announcements about companies that are going to be investing money in American factories, which has led people to believe that millions of new jobs are going to come back to the United States through these investments. Now, I've read a couple pieces about this, and the first thing I said was, well, that's not necessarily true. A lot of times they'll spend a lot of money on a plant, but really what you're talking about now, you're not creating industrial jobs per se. You're creating more IT jobs, and you're creating really highly skilled labor jobs of people who are going to be operating and working on robots and things of that nature, because a lot of manufacturing these days is done through IT. And as we make progress, if the economy starts to grow, you're going to see a lot of factories here and overseas convert to machines making machines, because that's the most productive way to manufacture these days. So any kind of process that can be automated is. We're not going to go back to the 1950s when U.S. Steel, for example, in Pittsburgh, employed 7,000 or 8,000 people on 3 shifts a day. And at 1 o'clock in the morning on the south side in Pittsburgh, there were hundreds of thousands of people, scores of people, thousands of people, literally, in the streets at 1 o'clock in the morning buying shoes and having dinner. The south side stores by those steel mills in Pittsburgh in the 1950s literally ran 24 hours a day. It would have been wonderful to see it, but that's, the bars were open, the theaters were open at 1 and 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning because there were thousands of workers doing shift work. We're not going to have that happen again. So if economic growth is bringing your job back from China or trade protectionism, then maybe you would view that as political progress. But it might not be political progress because those things may not actually produce the jobs. As far as the rest of it in 2 minutes, very quickly, what about cutting budgets? And I don't mean the president sending a budget out that has cuts in it for the EPA. I'm talking about cuts in the very largest portions of federal spending, which includes health and human services, defense, and entitlements. Are we talking about cutting those things or adjusting those things or fixing those things so that we can reduce the budget, so that we can eventually reduce the budget deficit? Now, the president did enact a hiring freeze, which is great, and I think that should be celebrated as far as reducing the budget deficit, but that's a very small, that's a drop in the bucket compared to what actually has to be done. But of course, we're not talking about that. We're talking about $1 trillion stimulus, which is improving and spending more on the government. We're talking about spending $54 billion on defense, which may be something that you feel is good, but we're not talking about cutting those portions of the budget that really have a huge impact. Foreign aid, for example. Trump wants to cut foreign aid. Fine. That's his prerogative. And if Republicans want to vote for that, that's their prerogative. But foreign aid is a very tiny portion. It's less than 5%, I think, of the federal budget. So that's something to be aware of. I don't feel that we're making political progress on the economy because, A, we still haven't addressed the repeal of Obamacare issue, which is a huge expense. We're starting to, but, you know, just like I said in the last segment, and then, you know, in terms of spending in general, I don't think we're making as much progress as we might have thought we were going to make during the election. For instance, let's talk about tax policy. You know, there's been very little discussion of tax policy in the current Congress. You haven't heard too much from the president on tax policy. We've certainly heard discussion of cutting the corporate tax, which is a good idea, but we haven't talked about, we're hearing, well, if we cut the corporate tax, we've got to make up that revenue. It's the same sort of thing where we're talking about tax credits here and increasing taxes there, you know, some kind of border adjustment tax to make up for the reduction in corporate tax, when the way you make up for a reduction in revenue is by cutting spending. So this is one of the reasons I don't feel that we're making very much progress on economic issues currently. Now, it's early, but I think it's fair to say economic progress, political progress in the economic arena, not so good lately. So I'll summarize the economy a little bit in the next segment, and then I guess I want to talk about foreign policy a little bit, because I think a discussion of defense issues kind of leads in to a little bit of a discussion in foreign policy. And there really wasn't too much in-depth conversation about foreign policy in the election. So I'm not sure what people think political progress on foreign policy is, and we'll talk about it next. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show.
At least I did it my way. I wait to phase, but in my heart I understand. I made my move, and it was all about you. Now I feel so far removed.
Just ahead of segment four, yeah, in addition to all the stuff, you know, there's a lot of specific talk in this podcast, in this show, about policy, and it's always fluid, but there's a lot of talk these days in the news about foreign manufacturing and various taxes, possible tariffs, and things of that nature. And in this environment, some companies are preparing to bring some of their manufacturing back to the United States. If your company is one of those companies, if you're the CEO, if you're the decision chain, you might be bringing some of your manufacturing back to the U.S. Now, as I've said often, there are good reasons to manufacture in the United States. But if your company is thinking along these lines and considering American manufacturing, remember DepoStar, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit their website and learn more at DepoStar.com, D-E-P-O-T, DepoStar.com. Here's segment four of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. So we're talking about political progress. And when I say political progress, again, I'm not talking about progressives. You know, the word progress is a loaded word in today's political discourse. You can't say progress because I'm talking about forward momentum on key issues that people who voted for Republican legislators and people who voted for Donald Trump may have voted for. We talked a little bit about the economy, and one of the words that I've used is shards to describe what ends up happening with the political discourse. And it doesn't matter if you're sitting and talking with friends, whether you are trading barbs with people on Facebook, whether you are reading tweets, you get these shards of people are very reactive on little issues. So-and-so said this. John McCain attacked Rand Paul in the Senate, and there will be a huge amount of tweets about what Rand Paul said and why he said it, with attachments and links, and this is why Rand Paul said this, and we shouldn't be enlarging NATO to include Montenegro, or McCain is right, the resurgent Russian threat is really important, and we need to expand NATO to address it, and on it goes. And we don't look at things globally. We're not looking at these issues globally, and I don't mean across the globe. Of course, in the case of foreign policy, I do, but we're not looking at them as global political issues, and we're not thinking about them in terms of how do we make progress. And this is one of my chief complaints during the campaign. I didn't hear from too many Republicans very much of a global view of foreign policy or a cogent idea of foreign policy. In the Cold War, and particularly right before Ronald Reagan was elected, it was a strong hawkish view of defending the United States and aggressively deterring the Soviets, as opposed to disarming. So there was the disarming side, which was usually promulgated by people like Frank Church and Senator Ted Kennedy and others. And then there was the other side, which was the Republican side. So that would have been Jim Baker and future President Reagan and others saying, we need to take a strong stance to deter the Soviets. They're the evil empire. So there were two different approaches. Well, we don't have that today. I am hard-pressed, even me, who reads this stuff every day, I am hard-pressed to determine exactly what President Trump's foreign policy actually is. It's something to the effect of, we're going to make America great again. I'm not sure what his approach with the Russians is. I'm not sure what his approach with the Chinese is. You know, we were going to be tough on the Chinese, and then he basically agreed to the two China policy, but apparently we got a good deal for that. So I don't know. He apparently renegotiated the F-35 deal or the Air Force One deal, and that's this. I mean, it's a lot of rhetorical, and I hate to keep using the word rhetorical, but it's a lot of vignettes. Let's just put it that way. There's a lot of political vignettes out there, and people, do you, in observing the political vignettes, which are these little things that happen, you know, somebody does something, the North Koreans shoot some missiles off, and then we have exercises going on at the same time, and we send Navy SEALs there, that's a vignette. And so people will argue back and forth about whether we should be escalating the North Korean situation or not. What's the overall foreign policy of Republicans and the people that voted for them when it comes to the rest of the world? Do you want to have NATO expanded to Montenegro? Do you know where Montenegro is? Do you know why that would be a good thing? Do you want to spend more money on the military? What specifically do you want to spend more money on the military for? Do you want laser weapons, which are kind of cool, I have to admit? Do you want more aircraft carriers? Do you want more soldiers? Do you want better uniforms? Do you want to replace the Humvee? You see what I'm saying? These are these questions that come up. And then what do we do with this military? How should we conduct foreign policy? And do people consider what's going on progress? We're supposed to be taller in the saddle. Supposedly, we're supposed to be getting the rest of the country to come around to the idea that the rest of the world needs to respect the United States. How do you do that? What's the best way to do that? What about ISIS? What about Turkey, which is, by the way, a member of NATO? What are we supposed to do with Turkey? You know, how do we continue to what's our foreign policy going to be in terms of diplomacy? And of course, the latest issue is foreign aid. Now, foreign aid, you know, people that I talked to in the campaign trail, this was usually the first foreign policy thing that came up besides immigration. And I'm talking about people immigrating from war-torn parts of the Middle East like Syria. That was the number one thing as a quote-unquote security threat. The second thing was this issue of foreign aid. We shouldn't be giving all these countries all that money. And if you asked people, and I did on more than one occasion, what percentage of the federal budget is foreign aid? Now, you can Google that. Just type in percentage of U.S. foreign aid as part of the U.S. budget, and you'll see the percentage. It's less than 10% of the federal budget. Now, that's a lot of money, but it's as a percentage of the federal government. What does foreign aid do? Foreign aid enables the United States to intervene or provide resources to countries so that we can take it away later, or so we can ameliorate problems without having to resort to force. So foreign aid comes into a lot of things, whether it's arms packages, direct cash, things like the Peace Corps, humanitarian aid, things of that nature. So foreign aid is kind of important. Cutting it, okay, we can cut it, but then what's going to be the outcome of that? That's what people said. We shouldn't be giving all this money to people. And I think it's because people think that foreign aid is a bigger part of the U.S. budget than it really is. How many of you have deeply considered these foreign affairs issues, whether it's the cost of NATO, who commands NATO, how big NATO is, resurgent Russian threats, and what about the rise of China militarily? China beginning to flex its muscle and beginning to attempt to project power, and not just in the Formosa Straits, the formerly, you know, the Taiwan, which used to be called Formosa, but it's the straits in between Taiwan and the mainland, and this concept of one China, two systems. So, you know, they don't want the United States to work with, to aid, or diplomatically recognize Taiwan. That was the big kerfuffle that happened with Trump. Kerfuffle, whatever it is. The big thing that happened with Trump at the beginning when he, at the beginning of his administration, a couple of months ago, when he said he made comments about how Taiwan was great and the Chinese got very upset. The Chinese are attempting to project their power a little bit with a bigger navy, with better fighters, with more technology, with bigger, you know, the army in general in China is used to suppress the people. But as China becomes more of an economic power, then the idea is that they would be able to, with certain types of tools like aircraft carriers, which I wouldn't worry about right now, but in any case, projecting military power. So the rise of China as a military force is an issue regarding foreign policy. Oddly enough, the guy that everybody thinks of as this mad dog, Defense Secretary Mattis, said last week that, yes, at the Pentagon, they are considering climate change as a threat to U.S. national security. Most Republicans I know consider global warming to be nonsense. I do. I'm sorry to say, I am not a proponent of the global warming theory. And here we have the general of the Pentagon, the guy who's the defense secretary. He's not the general of the Pentagon. He's the defense secretary, saying that global warming is a national security threat, or considered as part of the national security milieu at the Pentagon. Very interesting. And this is what's going on all over the place. And the reason I bring this stuff up is it's, as I said, you can't run fast enough to keep up with all of the stories that are rebroadcast as part of the Twitter feed or put up on Facebook or when you're having a conversation with friends. There's so much hopping around and so much, wait a minute, what about this and what about that, that nobody ever fully gets through one of these topics. Nobody ever has a 3 or 4 hour long conversation about foreign policy or economics or the ins and outs of healthcare, because it's just, you know, nobody wants to do that. So if we're going to make political progress on those issues, what do we need in 10 seconds? We need to be able to talk about them in depth, and we need to be able to develop the political organizations that will put pressure on our legislators to do what we want them to do. But first, we have to know what we want them to do. That's going to do it for this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Thanks for listening. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Yeah. Daylight savings time, St. Patrick's Day weekend, won't be long before we start seeing motorcycles, if you haven't seen any already. And if you ride, you know how important it is to be seen when you're out there. Check out Ciro3D, C-I-R-O-3D.com. Great motorcycle products and accessories, especially lighting options and solutions. Happy spring and ride safe from Ciro3D.com. Click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com or visit Ciro3D.com. Once again, appreciate xgovernmentcars.com for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Don't forget the low mileage expeditions and Yukons from Homeland Security and Border Patrol. Check them out online at xgovernmentcars.com.
xgovernmentcars.com.
And as you get ready for spring, remember the name Ryan Plumbing and Heating. They can make sure all of your systems are operating as we head into warmer weather. If you have an emergency, call 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan Plumbing and Heating, metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs too, for four-generation quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. Residential and business, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. All right? Ready for you guys to have a weekend. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast and subscribing on iTunes and for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Also, Stitcher.com, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, GCNLive.com for the radio show. And thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command. Getting ready for summer operations soon at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 611. Have a great weekend.